When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
There's something weird in the fridge today. I don't know what it is. Food I can't recognize.
Matt, I am so excited to sit down and not just talk about this particular Al parody, but we are actually joined by a man whose resume is so filled with things that just check off all the boxes of our interests that I'm just so excited. When we, about a year ago, we posted a thing on Instagram that said, hey, what are some like famous Al fanatics that we should have on the show? And I think three or four different people hit us up and said, you have to have Kevin Shinnick on the show. And we reached out to Kevin on Instagram and he said, yeah, I'd love to talk about Al.
Who doesn't like talking about Al?
See, that is even news to Kevin.
It is.
How popular you are on the internet. Well done.
Yeah. With my mother, my brother, and my father.
Listen, we're talking about a guy who was involved in stuff like Kenan and Kel, Robot Chicken, Mad, and of course, the writer of Scooby-Doo and Kiss, the Rock and Roll Mystery. So, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on this show. And you picked this one. This wasn't assigned to you. You said, I want to talk about Living in the Fridge, which I'm not sure where your feelings are on this, Kevin. As we've been recording this and talking about this particular album,
right?
The general consensus we seem to see is that this is definitely not looked at as one of Al's greatest records of all time.
Correct.
But I think that there are certain songs that really stand out. And I kind of think that Living in the Fridge is one of the stronger tracks on the whole album, personally.
I do, too. I do, too. Which, again, what I like about it, too, is... I mean, look, there's what's not to like about it? It was a popular song of that time. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was like the last song to be written for that album.
I have the story here and it is insane.
Lay it on me.
With the deadline looming, Yankovic sent requests to several artists to do a parody of their songs. He went with Aerosmith because they were the first to respond to him. The song was recorded a month after the rest of the tracks had been finalized and less than 2 months before the album's release. So he like literally got in the studio, knocked this one out, got it on the album and, you know, started getting it printed.
Exactly. Like, I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, I didn't know that when it came out, but I love that story also because, you know, being on Robot Chicken, having created the Mad animated series, I've experienced so many times where you'll be working on something that you think is gold and it doesn't land at all. And then it's something you whip out in the last 2 minutes before a deadline. People are like, that's brilliant. So anytime someone changes the trajectory of something with something they just came up with, I'm always like, I can support that. I can support that.
Yeah. And I mean, for me personally, I got into Aerosmith as a kid because of the Get a Grip album. I was like,
yes,
this album's really good. I mean, I think it was Wayne's World 2. I saw Wayne's World 2 and I'm like, who's this band? but like this song, I think it's funny to me because this is one of those infamous Al tricks, right? Like Living on the Edge was one of the more like self-congratulatory important Aerosmith songs from that era. So to take one of these like message songs from the band and turn it into this just ode to like a shitty roommate who won't throw out his food like is kind of like such like that to me is like perfect Al. Like
I agree. Go ahead, sorry, jump in.
I was gonna say we recently watched one of the Al TV specials where Al mocked Van Halen for Right Now, their very self-important music video, and made fun of all this stuff. And it just, this version of this parody reminds me of that as well, because this is a song that's so like, we're Aerosmith and we're here to solve the world's problems. And I like the fact that Al is mocking that. I mean, he's not directly mocking that, but in a way, the fact that he does this at all kind of points in that direction. I mean, I'm not sure if that's exactly Al's intent, but I just made that connection right now as you were saying it.
But also, when you go back and watch the original video of Living on the Edge, I mean, it begs to be parodied. I mean, it's like a Salvador Dali, you know, meets I don't know what. But it's so over the top. You're like, wow, where would you go with that? And I, you know, doesn't have, as far as I can see, he doesn't have a full video of Al, that is. He had like 40-second video on his show.
I was just going to say, Matt, did you see this?
No,
he did one of his things like he did on Lasagna in an Al TV that comes up later. He did like 40 seconds of music video parody for this.
You wanted to keep going. I mean, it's shot for shot.
I know. That's the weird thing about it is it looks like for what seems like a throwaway joke and part of a larger thing, like they got the room with the black and white checkerboard thing that in the Aerosmith video, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry are in there like, you know. And
he painted his face.
He did the black thing. Like it's there. And it seems like most of the work or the money that would have gone into recreating this whole video was already spent. And then they only did a portion of it. I'd love to know if they shot more, but as best I can tell on the internet, all you have is really kind of low quality YouTube of even that little bit of it. Someone did do a thing, as you pointed out, the parallel, the up and down of like both of the videos side by side to show how they, they match it. Exactly. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, you figure they probably, I mean, if I ever see Al again, I will ask him, because you can't, it didn't have that many sets. They kept returning to those same sets.
Yeah.
So you figure you have those sets, you might as well record
exactly
the whole video.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know, we've talked on the show before about how Al usually has a pretty limited music video budget, and on most records it's like he gets one proper video and then the next song is a low budget video, like something very very simple. On Alapalooza he already has two very high budget videos where he does the Red Hot Chili Peppers one and then the Claymation Jurassic Park video, which must have cost a lot of money. So I would assume that it was purely budgetary, where they were like, we just cannot get another like fully produced music video out of this record. It's a shame, because actually the little snippet of this is a really, it's a cruel tease of what could have been. Yeah.
And so what I like about that song too is it is, I feel like, a return to the simplicity. Mm. He's grown in so many ways over the years, but it comes back to it's Eat It Again. It's, you're not trying to make any such a great statement. You know, things have been said before. Yes, you've made the comparison with the Aerosmith and, you know, what he's taken the piss out of them.
Yeah.
But it is just simplistic, and it just makes me laugh. You know, there are certain songs that, because they broke through the culture more than others, Living on the Edge did that. It was everywhere in 93.
So you know what's funny? Just a really quick. So 93, we've talked before. Matt and I are about the same age, but I think we're figuring out, as right around this time in our chronology of Al, that you were a better young music fan than I was, because I didn't really start, like, I did not grow up in a musical household at all. I'm the oldest kid. I didn't have any siblings showing me anything. Guys, I 100% missed Living on the Edge in my, like, well, I don't,
really?
I think the first time I heard Living on the Edge was maybe as late as in my 30s.
Well, no. So here's the thing though, Matt, because I was thinking about this too, even as much as I loved the Get a Grip album, so I've always said that 1994 was the year that I discovered music, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was when like I started to find out about bands like Green Day. And I think the reason why you and I don't have as strong of a memory of Living on the Edge is probably because we both got into music a year or two later, And however big this song was completely overshadowed by the Alicia Silverstone and Liv Tyler music videos to come after it. Like,
right.
Once Crazy and Crying happened, I think MTV immediately just put the Living on an Edge video in a vault and just played those two videos over and over and over again because they way more captured what they were looking for in a 90s music video on the Edge.
It's funny.
Anybody's image of Aerosmith is those Liv Tyler and Alicia Silverstone videos.
Absolutely, at this point especially. But it's funny to hear this now because now this feels like this is like the transitional moment, kind of. I mean, there's a couple albums worth of transition for Aerosmith, but this is like them testing these waters and being like, you know what? I think we can get away with just being like leaning into being a pop production band. Because as much as this is like a rock song, but still, it's very pop produced.
Yeah.
And they just lean into that more and more and more as the years go on. And then by the end, they're, you have Steven Tyler singing in front of an orchestra.
As he was always meant to be.
As finally he's fulfilled his destiny.
Those scarves were not wasted on.
No. The scarf budget was well spent.
Well, it's something we always talk about with Al is specifically during these style parodies or song parodies, like the level that he finds of sounding like the lead singer of the band that's being parodied while still sounding like Al. Total. And he really nails that fine balance in this one, especially the bridge, right? When he gets to like the Steven Tyler scream of the, maybe I should take another peek. Like, it's like that perfect balance of every, like, it's those little details. I think that what makes this song, this is definitely, I think we've talked about this before, this is definitely one of the songs that is enhanced the better you know the song that's being parodied.
Correct.
Because it's like the tiny details just make it that much funnier along the way.
And on that note, because I didn't know the Aerosmith song for such a long time, this was a good experience for me because I honestly never really gave this song that much thought or attention leading up to today, because I have no relationship with that Aerosmith track, like just none. So this felt to me like it was almost an Al original.
Yeah.
The level of disconnect I have with the Aerosmith version made me feel, I really did not have. It's wild.
But I mean that video that they did, I mean, it has Eddie Furlong in it. It's got so much.
I know. I watched it in anticipation of this and I just was like, None. I've never seen this in my life. Today, I saw that video for the first time in my life.
That's crazy.
But now that you've compared and contrasted, has your appreciation of this parody grown at all?
I think it has. I mean, I actually do, even looking at it as an original, it's a fun track. Like, it's solid. Like, I didn't hate it. I just didn't have, you know, we've said before, like, I think Al's, the best parodies are where like the original and then Al's thing kind of perfectly come together and both boost each other up, you know, and you get this like elevated thing on both songs. And if you don't know the original, there's only so much that you can do that with. And then it just feels like an Al track, but also not like something like Al would not write a song like this. So I don't think none of his originals sound anything like this particular brand of Aerosmith rock and roll.
What's so funny about what you say there is I think one of the reasons I gravitated toward this song is because I did know it so well. So,
yeah.
So when I look at a list of them, I'm like, oh my God, yes, totally Living in the Fridge. Whereas, as you said, you don't know the original. So I was like, who doesn't know the original?
I know. Yeah. It's go figure. I mean, it's definitely a testament to my weird, like I'm more familiar with, somehow I'm more familiar with Who's Johnny than this massive Aerosmith hit. I don't know how that happened in my life. It's probably all because of Short Circuit.
That comes full circle because doesn't Al always, you know, speak to that small group? You know what I mean? It's like on Robot Chicken, we'll do a sketch that we think maybe four people might get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But that's the joy of that. I think Al
absolutely
take something big, but also make some sort of reference that you appreciate because only you and a few hand-picked people will get.
And I think a prime example of that is, I think it's in the very first season, but what put Robot Chicken on my radar was a segment where you made a reference to Sleepaway Camp. And I was like, this show knows Sleepaway Camp? Like, that was like this hidden gem of a joke within my like very small circle of friends. Right. So for there to be a show on mainstream television making a direct reference to it was like mind blowing to me.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Well, you know, the great thing about, I mean, that was my introduction, not my introduction to his music, but I first met Al on Robot Chicken. Mm. And then when I went and created Mad, the cartoon, it was towards, in fact, I think it's the very last episode of our 5-year run on Mad. I knew how much Al loved Mad Magazine. And, you know, he cites it as a source, as we all do.
Sure.
You know, of just, because in a sense, he did what Mad Magazine did, but for music.
Yeah.
Mad Magazine took the piss out of everything, but it was a magazine. And then Al comes along and just does it with music. So you're like, this man is my God.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him if he would like to play. I thought, what role could he play that he would probably never play in real life? So he plays Superman in our Man of Steel parody. And I just
love that.
Enjoying it so much. And that made me so happy.
That's so good.
The other thing that I guess I wasn't ever paying that much attention when I was a kid listening to this song, but when I really sat down, put the headphones in, and dove into this particular song, the background vocals throughout this track just keep improving in comedy to me. And it's specifically the final chorus where you've got the vocal in the background just going, dysentery, like over and over again. Yeah, like,
I never noticed that dysentery until this, until today. Dysentery, like the way that that comes in, it's so subtle. Like you can easily miss it. It's great.
In fact, when you look, I think when they list the lyrics, sometimes they don't even include it. Because towards the end, they're just throwing all sorts of stuff in there, you know? And
it's
I have to point out, I love, you know, that moment in both songs, in Living on the Edge, where the music cuts out. You just hear the as he's floating through space. But in Al's, it's the fridge door opening, which sounds a lot like the Thriller. You know,
it does. No, a perfect opportunity to throw in some an extra joke there.
Exactly.
In that, I actually, again, funny enough, like in anticipation of this, listening to the Aerosmith track again today. And it's hilarious. Like, it is a huge, just dead kind of silent gap in the middle of their song. Like, it's really long. And it made me very uncomfortable. And then I was like, oh, God. And I was like, of course, Al had to put a joke in here. Like, what else are you going to do when you get that's a gift. For a guy like Al, that's a gift.
The anticipation of that door opening to see exactly what's in that fridge. And then he just has that great scream.
Doom,
you know?
Doom.
But, you know, and you'd point out earlier that when his voice kind of matches whoever he's parodying best. Mm-hmm. I think we're all surprised, no matter what song we hear, what was like, wow, I didn't realize Al sounded so much like X. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize it sounded so much like Steven Tyler. Going back to My Sharona, you know, wow, mm-hmm. He really could have been.
Totally.
Could have been My Sharona.
Yeah. We've talked before on this show about how, like, what a great, like, if you just think about it from a singer in a band perspective, that Al gets this opportunity to just cosplay as some of his favorite singers of all time. Like, what a incredible thing. Like, what a joy to do it that way and get to, like, emulate David Byrne or the B-52s or any of these people. Like, it's just like so fun. Of course, it's so fun for him.
Yeah. And again, what was great about him, or what is great about him, is he constantly takes the piss out of himself before anybody else does. You know, he did it with his name.
Exactly.
A derogatory thing. And he's like, I'm going to own this.
Yeah,
and so
totally.
No matter what happens, he kind of just spins it.
Yeah.
He should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I totally agree.
Hasn't is actually kind of insane.
I think it will happen eventually. I really do, because there's also just no, like, especially as time continues now and his career starts to become more clear or defined, you know, in hindsight, like you just realize more and more as time goes on, like there was really no precedent. I mean, you mentioned Mad Magazine, which is a great, like a comedic example, but for his imprint in the music industry, there's just no precedent for who he was. And as we move forward, I don't think there will be anyone who can even take his place because the music industry has changed so much now that idea of someone building a career the way he has just seems impossible.
It does because, as we said before, I knew Living on the Edge and you didn't. But what's becoming smaller and smaller is our communal appreciation or acknowledge of something.
Yeah.
Like I've said this before, but I remember the last event, quote unquote, event that I can remember where you had to be in front of the television at the same time was Michael Jackson's Black and White video. That was going to be on a Monday at 8:30 on MTV. And anybody who was anybody was rushing home to watch that. Now, we don't have that. We have it on our own timetable. You watch it on YouTube later, pick it up on TikTok, whenever you... So there's no similarity in the culture that we all can point to and be like, oh, yes, now certain things will break through the culture and we'll all experience them. But there's no guarantee that we're all listening to the same thing at the same time.
No, it's true. It's very true. Another, just really quick, the Black or White, Michael Jackson, is another great example of a self-important song of the time period that Al was denied the parody of because it was too, Michael thought it was too important a message to make fun of. Yeah. Yeah.
It was too important, but not important enough that he had to grab his crotch at the end.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's really interesting to like look at it through a bunch of those different lenses. Cause I've said it before too, where it's like, I think of my childhood in the late '80s and into the '90s, and there were just songs that like my aunts, my grandfather, and I all knew that were popular songs at that time, because there was really only two or three ways to discover music, and it was the radio or MTV, and that was it. So like you had these hits that would that everybody knew for whatever reason.
Right.
Case in point, like the next album we're doing, Amish Paradise, Gangster's Paradise, like my parents knew the song Gangster's Paradise. My parents didn't listen to rap music, but that was like such an inescapable song. Now it's like I am an active music listener, and I still every week when I look at like what's on the top 40 radio, there's like 10 songs I've never heard of.
Of course.
And I'm just like, how, like, it, because there's so many other funnels and so many other ways to discover music and find stuff. So that's another reason why I don't think there'll be another Al, is that like, the plus with Al was at the time when he was doing this in the 80s and 90s, people could be a very well-rounded music fan in the sense of like they knew what the biggest rap songs were and the biggest pop songs and the biggest rock songs. Whereas like now a lot of people are very like tunnel vision of what is the genre they're into, and they don't want to like step outside that boundary. So where you'll have, we've said before, like Lonely Island is a great example of like someone taking what Al's doing to for the new generation, but that's very strictly if you're a fan of hip hop, Lonely Island is your Weird Al specifically focused on that genre. Like I think there'll be more genre parodyists in the world, but not anybody who can spin so many different genres and styles the way that he has been able to do.
It's true. And also, you know, the up and down side of that is, as you said, there's no common ground anymore. But, you know, I think Al has even said that now he doesn't release records because he can just put it online in a heartbeat. And, you know, whether it was Robot Chicken or Mad or whatever shows that are parodies, you know, the idea is to get it out there fast, because these things age quickly nowadays.
Oh, big time. We were talking before about how, like, for, you know, he has said, like, he's held records to try to make sure he was only waiting for the right cultural moment. On this album, the interesting thing that he did was he didn't have a song that felt like the song, like, Smells Like Nirvana was on the previous record. So instead, he did Jurassic Park, which was the big touchstone that he could, you know, make a hit around.
Touchstone. And you, as you said, you know, with social media now, not only are we not sharing things, but then our algorithms are all different. You know, if you're listening to the one thing, they're not going to show you whoever's power, you know, if it's not even in your lane.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie.
And we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
'91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to '91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
I remember one of the earlier, when I was doing MAD, one of the earlier notes I got from the legal department, which really made me laugh, was they said, they had a bunch of notes about sketches, and they said, oh, also, we'd appreciate it if you only parodied original music. And we all paused for a second. I was like, just say that out loud again. You can't parody original music. You know, that's the whole point of parody, because people have to know this stuff before they're like, oh, okay, so we made an argument for that.
Yeah, well, yeah. What are you going to do, parody your friend's song that no one else has ever heard of for the big laughs?
Exactly. I'm like, that's not parody. That's, I don't know what that is, but it's not parody.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, unless we have any other notes, I think we can dive into the ranking portion of the show real quick.
I suppose we can. I noted that, because I didn't know this, this song actually did wind up on the Al in the Box compilation, like his the permanent record best of set, which surprised me because I had that. And again, I it's so funny. Like, all I'm really thinking about this song is like the weird, like, lack of memory that I have of this track in my general, like my youngest Al memories. This song is just not there. It's so weird. And not in a bad way. You know, I'm not slamming it at all. I'm just, it's interesting that this just somehow, it is almost the very last song on that 4-disc long compilation. So maybe my young attention span was struggling to get that far. I don't know.
Well, but you know, I look at this list and it's all, I guess, I don't know what it is. Like, I think certain songs are better. Like, Eat It is a 33. Like, to me, wait.
We'll get there soon. Don't you worry about that. So for Matt and I, we have our own personal rankings. My personal ranking, Matt, you're going to be shocked by this. I'm putting this at number 6 on my Al parodies list.
Wow. I had a feeling,
just
Matt,
between Fat and I Can't Watch This, very, very high standing for me.
When we did the food album draft episode and you almost led with this as your number 1 pick,
yeah,
I had a feeling that you were going to be a big, big, big advocate for this track.
I love this song, but yes.
And
I'm so glad that you do.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I need to. I really don't mind. I actually think it's funny, too, because I also just Googled the Aerosmith track, and some of the stuff that pops up right away, if you just Google Aerosmith Living on the Edge, is like, immediately it's like, is this the worst Aerosmith song ever? Like, articles like that.
But how could it be? You know what I mean? But it's so funny because, like, I had this conversation with someone recently where there was a time where people just told you this was the most popular song there was, and it was jammed down our throats because they played it on the radio all the time. And the example, and yet in future generations, they never play it on the radio now. And an example I always give is the Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger duet, State of Shock. That was on the radio every moment of every day, as if it was a great song. And now you will never hear that song.
Can I tell you? So it's funny because we talked about that on this show before, because on a really old Al TV, he made fun of that song a bunch of times.
That's awesome.
And it never got a proper parody. He made a fake music video. Do you remember this, Matt? The State of Shock video with the radio, the label executive. I don't even remember the total setup to the bit, but it's like, we need a video and they couldn't make one in time. And so it's literally just the record company CEO sitting at his desk singing the song. It's like, dig into me good. Ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba. And he's just going... It's hilarious. We're like, Al parodying a song without actually doing a real. It's not even him in the clip. It's some other guy. It's really great. So it's good.
It's very, very good.
It's really, really good.
Used it a couple times. He was very proud of that.
He should have been.
A
it was a brilliant bit.
But I mean, but I get what you're saying too, because I was thinking about this. Is there any lyric in Al's Living in a Fridge that is dumber than a line like, if Chicken Little told you that the sky was falling, even if it wasn't, would you still come crawling back again? I think you would, my friend. Like, it is definitely one of those, like, this is not a well-written song for how self-important it is from Aerosmith.
But he does borrow a lot from the original song. So, like, you're a better man than I.
Yeah,
if you can tell what's in there, you're a better man than I. That's still the Aerosmith lyric, but it adds the joke of, if you know what's in the fridge, or you know what's under that.
The wonderful. We have to read it down because it's so good. The Aerosmith line is, "If you can judge a wise man by the color of his skin, then Mister, you're a better man than I." And Al's line is, "If you can name the object in that baggie over there, then Mister, you're a better man than I." Like, it's great. Anytime Al can keep the part of the phrase the same. I love that so much. I was going to say, so brilliant.
Thing. If you, the more you can keep it the same. And the funny thing is, again, going back to like Robot Chicken, whenever you want to do a parody, you get an idea. And then you're like, oh, you know what I should do? I should rewatch this movie so I can really nail the parody. And then you realize quickly, you don't need to rewatch these movies because what you remember is probably what most people remember. And if you dig any deeper, you're not, no one's going to appreciate it.
There's so diminishing returns on how obscure your references are. That,
Absolutely. So, so when you say things, you're a better man than I, I'm like, oh, that's not his lyric. That's, he totally made that work. in his own song.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Matt, where are you putting this song? And then we'll find out where Kevin is going to put this on the guest rankings.
I'm going to put this, I am going to put this a bit lower. And again, I don't think it's a, it's not a, it, I think it's a totally great track and it just does not resonate with me that much. And I really am chalking it up to the fact that the Aerosmith song just was not part of my life at all. I'm going to put it, down here, like not at the bottom, but in like the bottom middle, and put it in between Here's Johnny and Living with a Hernia.
Okay. That is pretty low in your rankings.
It's a little bit low. Yeah.
Now, Kevin, every time we've had a guest on the show, they've been able to place their song anywhere amongst the guest rankings, and they can move one song anywhere they want on the guest ranking. So we'll start with, where do you think amongst all of these songs Living in the Fridge deserves to be?
Well, this is what I mean by it's confusing, because like I think like a Surgeon, I think, is a better song than Living in the Fridge, and you've got that at 18. So like then I feel weird putting it any higher, because I think Like a Surgeon is a better song. So
well,
that's
so a little bit of a chess move that you could always do is obviously say Like a Surgeon is your bar of like, this is top tier Al.
Okay.
You can put Living in a Fridge somewhere and then move Like a Surgeon directly above Living in the Fridge.
I got you. All right.
To make a move. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I also like I Lost on Jeopardy. So you got a lot of good ones there. Let's see. I don't know. You Make Me off the top of my head. So I would put it. I would move Like a Surgeon to where You Make Me and then put Living in the Fridge at 18. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right.
Between Christmas at Ground Zero and Spam.
Yeah, our guest rankings are the craziest thing on this show, for sure. Because some people just want to be like a total chaotic being and just be like, you know what? Just to see what happens, I'm going to put Eat It to the bottom of the list and see.
How dare they?
Yeah, no, people like to really rile up others. It's fun. It's a great, horrible game we've created in the guest rankings.
Well, I think they play it with the idea of like, how many of the guests are listening to the show week to week? So they'll never know who was the person who made that
That's
move.
True. You're right.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
I listened to a few of yours, so I can, you know, I can hazard a guest here and there.
A couple of them, yeah. I just wanted to, a couple other really quick notes. So Living on the Edge by Aerosmith did indeed win the Grammy for Best Rock Performance in 1993.
Yeah.
So it was not that I didn't believe you, but I just saw that myself. It was indeed a very big track. And also, I think we mentioned this before on the show, but on Al's website, he has a list of artists that are his favorite personally and his most influential as a artist. And to be fair, it's in alphabetical order, but still, Aerosmith is number one on that list.
Wow.
Of Al's favorite artists.
It's even on there is amazing. Again, probably because they were the first people to respond when he said, I just,
perhaps so. No, I mean, he's saying this based on his own like childhood and like what he grew up loving, I think. And
yeah,
I think Aerosmith ranks high for him.
I think he and I also had a lot of the same touchstones. Mm-hmm. You know, the Zucker Brothers, Monty Python, Mad Magazine, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Look, and I've said this a million times on a million different podcasts, and I'm sure I've said it on this podcast as well, but it is worth noting that I've said before that Aerosmith is one of the few bands that I can think of who, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and even into the 2010s, managed to stay popular, relevant, and somehow find a balance where they never didn't sound like Aerosmith, but their 90s album feels definitively 90s. Their 70s album feels definitively 70s. And their 2000s, like, they were able to constantly evolve with the musical times while still being true to themselves. And I think that Al is one of the only other exceptions of someone who's been able to, like, shift through every decade feeling distinctly Weird Al, but distinctly modern at the same time. So, of course, he probably loves Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And, you know, Aerosmith had the help of Run DMC making them relevant.
That is true.
Yeah. I mean,
no, this no one really helped Al. I mean, listen.
Michael Jackson a little bit. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I say that as a joke since he is a parody. Everybody helps out.
It's true. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. You know, even I read recently where Lady Gaga, her manager said no. And then she heard it on the radio and she's like, that's fantastic. And he was like, oh, well, I said no to them. And she's like, what? So yeah. She went and said, no, you're allowed to do this.
I love that story because we haven't, we're building up, of course, to the episode about Perform This Way that he did. But I also liked the idea that perhaps, because it's just like, it's such a classic Hollywood thing to blame your manager. So I also liked the idea that maybe she said no. And then the backlash was so intense and she was like, we're changing our mind. We're saying yes. And I'm blaming you. That's what managers are for. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, sorry. My bad. I didn't realize. Yeah. Well, because boy, that was intense.
Yeah. Well, there's also the like, and we'll get there eventually soon, but there's the You're Pitiful thing as well, where like James Blunt gave him the yes to take Your Beautiful and turn it into You're Pitiful. And he recorded the song. And then just before the album came out, the record label said like, absolutely not. And then, but he was like, well, James said it was fine. So I'm just going to release it as a free track on my website then for people to download. Yeah.
As long as he does it for free, then you're like, okay, I can't, I can't stop them.
Yeah. That was the only time I think that was that weird, like label said no, but artist said yes. And I was like, well, I don't give a shit about the label. If James Blunt is cool, then I'm fine with that. Like, that's all I need to hear.
Well, if you think about it, like it all started because the lead singer of My Sharona was like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know. Like, it's an amazing thing to think about that dude had enough of a sense of humor. Like, he heard that and was just like, this is amazing. He's like, you guys got to hear this. He got Al a single on Capitol Records. Like, that was entirely that dude.
That started it all. I mean, imagine you just said no. I'd be like, I guess no one's going to allow me to do my music.
If My Sharona, if the Knack did not have such a good sense of humor, we would not be here today.
It's so true.
It is.
And Al just won an Emmy recently.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. Yeah.
It is very weird to think about the world, like, because I guess it's easy now to be like, yes, it's Weird Al. Everybody knows him. Who would ever say no to him? But for the first like 3 or 4 albums, it really was him going up to these giants in the music industry, like a scared child, just being like, is it okay if I make fun of you?
But what's so weird is I couldn't wrap my mind around it because in my memory, he just like showed up.
Yeah.
He came out of the gate with huge songs like My Bologna or, you know, it's like, wait, how did he got Michael Jackson when Michael Jackson was at his absolute peak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, How did that happen? How did he get him to say, Michael, would you do this? Sure, why not?
Michael normalized it a lot, too, because, and again, the other thing, like, let's be real, he's sharing the money. So all these people are just like, are you telling me that I don't have to do anything and I'm going to make a bunch more money on my already hit song? Sounds good. That's great. Like, you have to, unless you're really, again, super serious about it. Like, Michael said no to Black or White because he just was like, I just don't feel good about that. Fair enough. And
or Prince and Paul McCartney saying no to everything.
I don't want to besmirch this by turning into a puma and grabbing my crotch at the end of it. I'd rather that be
exactly. Yeah, yeah. This song's really important, which is why it's critical that only I make all the money from it.
You know, I was bummed because we were Al did Mad, obviously, like I said, and he did Robot Chicken, but we were trying to animate some of his songs, and he had come to us with to do a video and stuff. And unfortunately, legally, it wound up not happening. But I was like, sorry, because I didn't want Warner Brothers or whomever to be one of the jerks that were like, no, we can't make this work, you know, because Al can make everything work, or so it seems. And I'm sure you've heard this a million times. He is the nicest, most decent human being you will ever meet.
It is
a mensch.
It is our goal to one day have Al join us on this show, but also it's
so great.
But it's also like, well, that would kill the show at the exact same time. So it's like you got to save him for the last possible episode.
You would.
But there's so many people that we've had come on who've all say the same thing. Like, you meet Al, and if he likes you, you've got like a friend for life with Al. Yeah. That's always going to check in. He's going to respond to emails. He's going to send you Christmas cards. Like,
well,
just
that's
the sweetest
so crazy
of men.
Is, like, I'm on his, you know, birthday list or whatever. And I know I'm not the only one. I know, but the lengths that he goes to you yeah. know to for friends or, and it's like the appreciation is just I can't even say it enough, because it's just like, we worked together, he was a wonderful guy, and then you're like, wow, he recognizes these things, and he makes, and this has been said of a lot of people, but it's so true, when you meet someone, they make everybody feel special.
Yeah,
you walk away being like, wow, Al knows who I am. He's talking to me like a human being. He's a human being. You know, he's just a super guy.
Yeah. One of the other people I heard that about, who unfortunately we lost last year, but Paul Rubens, I heard, was a very similar type of person. My friend worked on a project that didn't come to fruition with Paul Rubens. And he's like, and even then he's like, I got birthday and Christmas cards from Paul Rubens for the last 15 years for a project that didn't happen. Like that's like the type of guy he was.
Well, you know, I had that experience with Stan Lee, and I always joke about it, where I worked with him on Robot Chicken, and then when I brought him over to MAD, I just, you know, reiterated he was in his 80s. I said, oh, you know, Stan, we worked together on Robot Chicken, and his response was, I remember you wore those same pants. Now, of course, he probably doesn't remember at all, but he always had that way of making you feel like, oh, what, this guy knows me.
I got to tell you this classic Stan Lee moment. So this podcast is on a network that my friend and I created called Geekscape. And we've done a bunch of stuff with Stan Lee over the years. But the very first time that we ever met Stan Lee, it was like a red carpet, like press line. And we just wanted him to film a bumper where he said, this is Stan Lee and you're watching Geekscape. But it was really loud and we have the camera on him. And we said, Stan, can you just say, this is Stan Lee and you're watching Geekscape? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, this is Stan Lee and you're watching Dickscape. And he goes, wait, I think I said it wrong. And you hear the guy you created go, you said it perfectly, Stan. That's the one.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story.
Hey, hello to everybody at Geekspace. This is Stan Lee saying Excelsior.
It's Geekscape.
Dickscape.
Yeah, not space.
What did I say? Space. Dickscape.
Yeah, like landscape.
All right. Hey, I didn't mean Dickspace. Hello to everybody at Dickscape. No. Dickspace.
That is beyond good enough, Stan.
But you know, we're lucky to have people like this in our world.
Oh, they're so lucky.
Fans, or you know, it makes the world go round, and especially in the entertainment business. And why Al is so important, I think, is because he really did. You know, you can say that about comic book geeks or whatever, but he, you feel akin to him.
Yep,
he was a nerd. He was playing accordion. There's no world where this man should go on to be as phenomenal as Al is. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think that's what's so funny and weird, the Al Yankovic story, right? Is that he's depicting himself as he is, but with this like underlying vibe of like, this dude is cleaning up with the ladies. it's just this like subtle thing. It's like, yeah, he's into all the dorky stuff that kept us alone in the basement instead of going on a date on a Friday night. But he,
and yet his wife is gorgeous. His daughter's a wonderful girl. I mean, he's doing it all right. You know what I mean? It's like won at life. And everything about him on your first glance, you would think, oh, that poor guy's going to rue the day that he left the house.
Well, we're talking about people who are the absolute best, and I would put you in that category as well, Kevin. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anywhere that someone should go if they want to know what's next in the world of you?
You can always find me at Kevin Shinnick on Instagram or on Twitter. That's usually the place. I have a website too, www.kevinshinnick.com. But like I said, Instagram and Twitter are usually where I announce a lot of fun things. And I will point out that if there's ever a lull in this interview when you listen back, you should put in the or the door opening to the fridge from Living in the
Past. There you go. I love it.
Thanks for having me, guys. This
was such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie.
And we're excited for you to join our Best Friend Hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.